Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all listening around the world and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and or just finding greater happiness and so much more. Now, having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, for everybody listening, I'm looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone that you know that can benefit from a particular show. Now, I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we, together, can make a positive difference in the lives of others. With me, once again, as co-host, is our kindness expert, who is also making her own positive difference in the lives of others, Gabriella Von Rey. Now, Gabriella is the author of With All My Might, I Can Find My Might, and Watch Your Delivery. She is seen on national TV and speaks at school assemblies and corporate events across the U.S., spreading her message, "We as a society have dropped the ball on human kindness. Will you help me pick it up?" Gabrielle, I'm so happy to have you here and to have you joining us here today, but I'm thinking that after me being gone for a couple of weeks, I should be saying, "I'm so happy I could join you today."
Because you're it. Wow. And people come and listen to you, Alan. So I'm glad I could step in and make life a little easier on you.
Well, I appreciate it very much, but I think you're being very kind because because I get the notices. And people call me or people will text me or send things through the website, and either I get it or Jan gets it, and every time we get things that just say, "Oh my God, she's so wonderful. I'm so glad that you had her on here. She did such a great job." Aww. So thank you. It is definitely my pleasure.
I did not know that. So thank you.
You're very welcome.
Because you haven't seen me in a while, just to tell you real quickly, the Dare to Be Kind movement is gearing up to leave at the end of this month for a world tour.
Okay, so tell us more.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin. It's kind of crazy, but I felt like I needed to bring the movement to the people instead of going each time from place to place, because as you know, we are trying to find the people that feel dehumanized, that feel unnoticed, unwanted, and unloved, and we're trying to reach them. But I thought of something the other day, and places are also feeling that sometimes, right? A little town never gets a speaker or never gets a radio host or never gets that interaction. And I thought, what if we start that way? What if we start traveling to all these, not always the big cities, but all these small towns and communities that are out there that could use some kindness too?
I couldn't agree more. And again, as I've told you many times, if there's anything I can do, let me know.
I will.
All right. And while we're talking about that, what can the listeners do? In other words, you know, what are the things that they can do to get involved, to help, or to help spread kindness?
Right now, the first thing you can do is, my first call to action is always the same, and it's actually really simple. Look in a 2-mile radius around you in your own environment and think of that forgotten person, whether it's the person that's the barista in a Starbucks that always serves you and that you only notice when they're gone. Think of the cashier that's grumpy each day. Talk to her. You know, don't just pass. Talk to her. Stop. You really will make a difference. All those people, the person in the parking lot, it's always the same attendant, and we only notice them when they're gone.
Well, I love that. And, you know, one of the things that we're going to be talking about that has to do with screen time, and part of screen time, we were just talking about the fact that you get a dopamine hit from that. you also, you give a dopamine hit when you tell that person that you like them or you appreciate them or you're grateful for them. So it's not only something you can do for yourself, but you can start doing it for others.
Absolutely. That human interaction. I'm trying to bring that back with the whole movement because it's really important, the face-to-face.
You got it. And fortunately, we are here with face-to-face in studio. Our guests are here, which helps so much. Now, our topic today is Dim the Screen, Brighten the Future. It's helping teens develop healthy digital habits. Now, we live in a fascinating time and culture. Technology has given us immediate access to unlimited information, the ability to communicate worldwide, the ability to connect with billions of people. It has substantially shrunk the world and provided tools to be more productive than ever thought imaginable. It has also had many notable negative consequences.
With all the great tools and opportunity that technology provides, who would have thought it would cause so many problems? Most of us have experienced both the positive and the negative aspects of being connected to the digital world. Unfortunately, for some, the negative aspects of our modern digital culture has led to destructive consequences. Social isolation, exposure to bad influences, compulsive behavior, addictive behavior, anonymity. There we go. Enabled conflict and depression are just some of the issues impact those who are unable to maintain balance in their life when it comes to being connected.
Well, the genie's out of the bottle. Modern society is finding it necessary to manage these digital pitfalls while still reaping the many positive benefits of rapidly increasing technology in our ever-changing world. Our guests today are making a difference in the lives of adolescents that have succumbed to the darker and more debilitating consequences of living in a digital world. They represent Logan River Academy's DART program, which provides treatment for these issues. Joining us is Jeff Smith and Mont Kretel. Jeff is one of the founders of Logan River Academy and has worked in residential treatment for over 35 years. And for those that were listening when I talked about earlier, when I said that that I've had over 30 years experience working with families in crisis and many of the people that have been working with them, Jeff is one of them. So we have known each other for about 35 years. So he received both his bachelor's and master's degree from Brigham Young University while working in this field. Under his leadership, thousands of teens have received the help they needed to create a more positive future for themselves.
And Mont is a therapist and the residential director at Logan River Academy. He earned a BA degree in family and human development and an MA degree in marriage and family therapy from Utah State University. He has worked with adolescents and families for nearly two decades. Mont was instrumental in developing the DART Digital Addiction Recovery Treatment program at Logan River Academy in 2017. This program is currently helping teens and families find a healthier balance in their digital lives. Gentlemen, welcome to Answers to the Family.
Thank you for having us. Good morning, Alan and Gabriella. We're happy to be here.
It's good to be with you.
All right. So as we brought up in the introduction, I mean, we're talking about screen time. We're talking about not only teens, but I know this is something that goes to adults, and I think even before we went on the air, we were talking about modeling and stuff that, you know, we as adults need to model it if we're going to expect them to follow suit. But so let's just talk as a society. I mean, have we all become obsessed with technology?
Well, that's a good question. I driving here this morning, we were coming down the freeway, and without even paying attention, really, I was just kind of looking around, and it seemed that almost every billboard that I saw had something to do with technology, video games, the iPhone, this and that, wireless. That just looking around, I thought, holy cow, that our whole world is consumed with, you know, this technology and all these products and forms of media that are out there.
Mm-hmm. I agree totally. And budget-wise, I mean, financially, I think if you just think the internet at home, a general modem is, what, $100 a month? Right. And then the family plans to keep this all alive is really big, too.
Yeah, and it's no wonder we're obsessed with it. We live in this George Jetson sort of environment where we have so many amazing things that 5-10 years ago we wouldn't have even been able to imagine. And so it makes sense that we sit and stand in lines for the latest product to come out, and we go home and talk about it, and everybody's excited. So it's, you know, there's some reasoning behind why it's so wonderful, because who would have known that we would, you know, have a watch on our wrist that you can get your banking information from and look up addresses and directions, and that's pretty amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jeff, you and I have been in this business a long time, and I know that when I started bringing kids to the programs that you were running, one of the bigger issues we were dealing with was addiction, but that addiction at that time was usually drugs and alcohol. Are we now looking at the screens as now being the next big addiction?
Unfortunately, drug and alcohol is still an issue.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly the problems that some people are facing with compulsions and just, you know, being consumed by electronics and digital media and those sorts of things is very real and can be very debilitating for some people that can't find a balance in their lives. I know that sometimes other issues can be exacerbated by this. It's a place to escape. It's a place to get, to find connections. But a lot of times it's a place to hide. It's not just a place to socialize, but it's a place to hide. And when it becomes debilitating to the point where it impacts, you know, functioning in a family, functioning in society, that's when it becomes a problem. But yeah, it's definitely an issue. And you know, I remember several years ago we were concerned about the music kids were listening to, and
yeah.
Now nobody talks about that.
Mm-hmm.
This has certainly supplanted that in terms of being an issue for families and for children.
But would you say that the issue is more, and any of you can answer, is this more an adult or an adolescent problem?
Well, unfortunately, it's all of us. You know, I think maybe we are seeing teens and adolescents being affected by it more. Just because of their age and their lack of development, mm-hmm. and immaturity. But, you know, you don't have to walk very far down the street before you see, you know, adults who are consumed themselves with their phones. We were talking before we came on air about, you know, the idea of a zombie apocalypse, and it's here. It's right in front of us. We walk around in these trances because of our technology. So we have to have it. We live in it. We need to use it. But at times, it really does consume our lives.
But think of I'm just thinking of a practical side of it. I don't know LA that well, mm-hmm. and I still need my GPS. So let's say that Alan says to me, we're finished the show, and he says, quick bite. Let's pretend. Sorry. You don't have to, by the way. But quick bite, and we will flip out our phones.
Right.
And no matter what age we are, because we'll look that up.
Right.
So that part, of course, is super. Mm-hmm. That part we need kind of to go from A to B.
Yeah.
So where do we go wrong between the A to B, which is a logical evolution of using the technology to our advantage,
yeah.
the positive? But where do we seep that negative in?
Well, I think the key is balance. And for me, it feels a little bit like as a society, we're becoming a little unbalanced,
okay.
with technology. So, you know, I've fixed things in my home, okay. that I would have never guessed I could fix because I can get on my phone
and
put in
up.
The exact model number and serial number of my dryer. And next thing you know, I'm fixing something that I would have never been able to because of technology. Mm-hmm. The flip side of that is, I'll share an example with you. I'm not a gardener. I have a little garden area in the back of my yard, and this past summer I thought, you know, I'm going to plant some tomatoes and some pumpkins, and my first thought was, I'm going to pull out my phone, what kind of pumpkins grow well, and then I thought, you know what, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go down to the nursery, went down to the local nursery, sought someone out, had a human interaction with them, asked them questions. They took me around the store, you know, here are a few options, you could do this. So, you know, I could have done that on my phone, and one or the other isn't right or wrong. It's just the idea of keeping balance in our life.
But I love that you just brought that up. I love it because I think of all the children that I tell them, you know, think of your grandparents, and they always go, they can't do this, duh. And then I go, no, this is the occasion. And they go, what? I said, let's say that you want to know something that you're going to Google, but instead of Googling it, phone your grandparents. And they go, why? And I said, because the information on Google is general. Now, if you ask it to your grandparents, you're going to get the story behind it. You're going to get the experience. And they're going to tell you something that you'll never forget because of the way it's said to you.
Yeah, and not only that, but we work our brains, we work our minds more when we have to dig and talk and socialize. So, again, I'll just come back to that word. It's about balance. It's about moderating it, using technology when we have it at our fingertips, but not getting away from these things that are a part of the human experience of using deductive logic, of figuring things out, of making our brain work to get an answer.
So, Jeff, as Gabriella was saying that about going to the grandparents, it reminded me the programs of the past, a lot of that was about story. It was about sitting down like Indians did at one time and to interact with people in a circle and to ask questions and look people in the eye. Is that being used, and is that part of the system that you're using that is part of DART, where you're getting them back to that type of communication?
Yeah, it is. We take a harm reduction approach to it, and we look at, you know, the problems associated. Kids who present to us, it's become an issue, and it's usually a comorbid issue with other things, but certainly finding alternatives for time. I mean, people are not bored these days. It used to be people would get bored. Nobody's ever bored anymore because they have access to the world. But we want them to find other ways to spend their time that are maybe more productive, especially socially, other ways to get that dopamine hit. So we get kids involved in other kinds of activities, interacting with each other, doing challenging things, doing physical things, and just kind of getting away from being totally dependent or reliant on the technology. However, we still keep technology in our lives. We use computers in our school setting. We, you know, use obviously technology for involving the family and the therapy process. And so there's not the, you know, the detoxification, if you will, or the isolation from it and totally taking it away. Our kids still stay engaged in technology, but we find ways to expand their world to other things that they will find to be productive and things they can use in the future.
May I ask you a little bit about dopamine? Because I honestly do not know anything about it. And so maybe there are listeners like me out there. Could you explain that just a little bit more, what happens to the brain?
Well, I mean, Mont might be better to talk about this, but the reinforcement, I mean, dopamine is, as I understand it, and I'm not a neurobiologist by any means, but, you know, it's a pleasure. We get a, and you can get dopamine from, and other chemicals, obviously, from a variety of sources, and exercise, pleasurable things.
Okay.
But there is a definite chemical reaction that's going on in the brain. And to be frank, we as a society and we as individuals are being manipulated by people who can benefit from engaging us in technology.
Could you give me an example?
Well, I know there are some of the big companies will, you know, have people that their sole responsibility is engagement. And so they're looking for ways, much like a casino is giving you intermittent reinforcement to put another nickel in the slot machine or another dollar in the slot machine, I guess, with some kind of intermittent payoff and noises and visual stimulus. Our devices are designed to keep us looking at them. The content and the software and the programming is designed to engage us.
You're almost saying, like, sometimes when I leave a website, it says, "Are you sure you want to leave?" And
yes.
I'm like, "What the?"
It's like the big red bleeping
thing versus
the little
small. That's kind of what we're talking about, right?
Right. Well, that, or you notice that it's, if you liked this, you'll probably like this.
Yeah.
So anybody who likes to look at this YouTube video probably wants to see this one, this one, and this one. So it's everything they can do to hang on to your eyeballs.
But there is a science behind how you track a page and where, you know, where to put things and how much time you'll spend before you'll move to the next decision point. And so it's really a lot of smart people are spending a lot of time and energy, you know, becoming
trying
very
to figure
good
out who we are and what we want to consume.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just heard someone that is essentially a whistleblower, and he left one of the large companies, the large internet companies, and said the reason that he did it was because of the way in which the manipulation was being done. He felt was so harmful to people that the manipulation at times was, in his words, evil, to the point that he left that. And as a whistleblower, he went to Congress or something and said, you guys need to look deeper into this because this is what's being done behind the scenes that you aren't seeing.
But when you talk about that, I instantly think of the poverty level. We have a high rate of poverty in this country and in other countries too, but in this country particularly, but the child still has an iPhone. And I just find that mind-boggling. Does it almost have to do with identity?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that comment just highlights how important that technology is in our society. Everyone has it. And so if you don't have it, you feel that you're not a part of society.
You feel you're an outcast.
You feel you're an outcast. Mm-hmm. And so I think as a society, as parents, as teenagers, you know, there's this drive and push that I have to have that. If I'm not able to connect. And so, you know, we don't connect as much as we used to in, you know, face-to-face, sitting together as a group. It's how our world connects now. Everybody's on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. You've got to be, you know, connected to your group. And so it's unfortunate because we shouldn't be that way, but we are. And so I think it's why, like you say, people in maybe even circumstances where they can't afford it push themselves.
But even, I know as an adult, even if I watch something, let's say I watch a movie on Amazon, at the end, it already recommends me what I should watch next. It says, we recommend this for Gabriella. Mm-hmm. And the first time I was like, ooh.
Thank you.
Ooh. Yeah, you just made me feel important. Sorry.
You're listening to me.
Yeah. But then, because I'm technology savvy, I said, who the heck are they? Mm-hmm. And so I started realizing the whole world of bots, right? Of these robots indirectly that see what you do. And then I felt kind of had, because I want to watch a movie without everyone knowing what I watch. Not because I'm embarrassed or something, but because I thought I had a part of privacy. And maybe you could touch on that, because I don't think parents know at all what that actually means in today's world.
Yeah, it is. We've hit on that a little bit, but it mm-hmm. is a, it's a, you know, this positive and a negative, because okay. we've talked about it's here. This technology is here to stay. I'm not developing it. I'm not the one providing, but I need it in my life to communicate and work. And so I think it is important for parents to be aware of what is, they have to educate themselves, and you can become educated on what a phone does and what the technology is behind it, or what certain apps are for, or what platforms of social media your child is on. If you're going to let your child have a social media account, you should know everything that you can about that particular form of social media, how it works, who's following it, and it's just, we can't turn a blind eye anymore as parents to what our kids are doing.
Now, and you touched on something that ties into the investigation side of my life, and that is the parents knowing who they're in contact with. I mean, I've worked many cases where the people turned out to be very bad people. The girl who I worked many cases where underage girls, they believe that they're talking to one person, and they eventually go and meet this person, and it's not who they thought, and which has been, it's been kidnapping situations and stuff. So, and in fact, there's a video for parents that if you get a chance, you can go on YouTube and find it. And it's a guy who went out, met with parents whose daughters were interacting with people and wouldn't let the parents into it. Well, this guy went, the parents essentially hired him. He set it up with the girl to meet with her and then pulled her into a van and put a hood over her head. And when they took it off, the parents were in the van. Hmm. Just said, and you thought you were dealing with Bobby down the street. the whole time because the guy sent pictures saying, this is who I am. Look, I look wholesome. Look at me. Right. And it really wasn't. So, yes, it is very dangerous out there. And that's even more reason for the parents to stay involved and to know who their kids are in contact with.
Right. You know, and I think parents sometimes, for some reason in modern society as parents, we've almost become afraid, it seems, to be parents with this issue. And we just kind of sit back and, well, okay, I'll trust my child. And so in a way, parents need to take back some of that power to say, I'm the parent, I'm in charge. And if it comes right down to it, you won't have a phone, or you won't be on Twitter, or you won't be on Instagram, whether there's a meltdown and a freak out or not.
But I think for parents, the big problem, and the kids know this, they play on this. They play really heavily on this. I've seen it in restaurants, I've seen it in schools, is the parent is not knowledgeable. And I always say, would you give your car to your kid? The answer is no.
Right.
You don't give your car to a kid that's 10. Doesn't have a license, doesn't have this, doesn't have that. And I don't know, is this kind of what you're trying to bring back, that the parent, before giving the phone, has like an educative moment, and not like 3 minutes, I'm talking about a real educative moment where maybe on an hourly basis they work together with the child? And
very much so. I think what a lot of families do is a phone or a laptop or a tablet, they seem so harmless. And so they just say, here you go, without thinking, we need to have a plan. We need to have parameters around this. We need to have guidelines. And so absolutely, families, if their children are going to have phones, social media accounts, laptops, there absolutely have to be plans, limits, and guidelines around it.
Yeah, plus the fact that your kid could buy almost anything online and you would see your credit card later and you'd go, oops.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because that too, to what point is this addictive? Because we haven't touched on this yet, is I don't play it, but I hear everyone talk about it. Candy Crush. And I had a friend who said, oh, I have so many points, or I don't know, so many lives. I really don't know. But I bought them. And that made me then think, okay, but do you then get addicted because you don't have, you know, if you're doing badly in Candy Crush and you have to discuss this with your colleagues, if you're an adult or with the kids at school, isn't that kind of the same? You then kind of play catch up and you buy the...
Yes, there are very much addictive qualities to all of these types of things. Games, you know, internet gambling, social media accounts, Pinterest, coming back to that idea of the dopamine hit.
Okay.
And so just like anything else in life that is pleasurable, we experience it, there's a dopamine hit. If we're regulating ourselves and moderating life, we go out, we exercise, we do okay, we have the dopamine, and we walk away from it. Once we start to become addicted to something, we keep coming back and seeking that dopamine rush. So if it's Candy Crush, if it's gambling, whatever it is, we come back and we want more and more and more. We worked with a woman named Dr. Kimberly Young back east. She's at St. Bonaventure as we developed our DART program. She has a website called netaddiction.com. She's been doing research and studies with us way back into the mid-90s when the World Wide Web started to become a thing. Mm-hmm. And she shares unbelievable stories of people ruining their lives and wasting hundreds of thousands of dollars because of getting online and having virtual life and virtual games and embezzling money to keep online games going. When outside of that, they're normal people, secretaries with jobs and families and spouses, and these online games have ruined their lives.
If I have a 14-year-old sitting at home and I'm trying to get that phone away, and I'm trying to get him to stop playing whatever it is he's playing, how do I do that without starting World War III in my household?
Well,
because that's my. I mean, I am a mom, and I know this is so heavy. Because you've had a hard day too, and you really want peace.
Hopefully, World War III can be avoided.
Okay.
But if it can't, parents still have to be comfortable wading into that and do. You know, if you walked into your child's bedroom and they were in there doing heroin, and you knew World War III was going to start, you would still say, I'm not, and I apologize, I don't mean to compare technology to heroin because it's But the idea is, if this is damaging and it is hurting your child and hurting your family, you have to be willing to say, we are going to do something different. And if that means pulling a phone out of a child's hand, then you have to be willing to do that, and then start to say, what are we going to do about it? What plans are we going to set up? What limits are we going to put in place? How are we going to start weaning ourselves back from this problem that we've gotten into?
And you guys help with that.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, and I've spoken with some of the parents, and it amazes me sometimes how many of them will say, but if I do that, they won't like me.
Yeah.
Or they won't be my friend. And my answer is, your child does not need a 45-year-old best friend.
Right.
Your job as parent, read the definition of parent. You're not there to be their best friend. You're there to help, to protect, and to all of the things that are under the guise of parent.
Right.
But I can again tell you as a mom, when you're, and girls are worse at this than boys, when they say that they hate you, I mean, it is the first time you hear that. You're kaput from that. And then you go, what happened to this child? But, you know.
Yeah.
So you are right. But is there, I keep coming back at this dopamine. It interests me, apparently. and Alan said, kindness is dopamine. So yes. I should, I'm going to look at this up a little bit more. So is there something I could do with my 14-year-old that would replace the interest?
Absolutely. One of the things I think that is happening in our society as well, as kids become more involved and obsessed with technology, they're slowly stopping doing those other things that are so healthy and valuable. Being outside, exploring, exercising, playing, socializing, going for walks, having kids over in the backyard, playing games outside. We're getting away from those things, which also provide dopamine hits and are also very healthy and keep our, you know, our fitness levels up, and we're outside experiencing sunshine and nature and other people. So one of the things that parents have to be able to do is tactfully and nicely push their kids out. We've got to get them out of the house and back out into these things that, you know, our generation have done for decades and decades, and slowly we're seeing the current generation move away from doing some of those things that are so helpful. And
then would you suggest parents to leave the phones of the children and to leave their own phone at home while trying to do these games outside?
Yeah, one of the things that's important for families to do are set times and days and stretches of time where there is no technology, where they're able to say, you know what, when we come home from school, for that three-hour stretch, no phones, no laptops until homework is done or dinner. And it's not a one-size-fits-all. You know, some families might say, when the kids get home from school, there's a 30-minute stretch, or it's okay to get on your phone, decompress, do what you need to. But when you're done with that, now we're going to have our stretch of time where we turn it off and do these other things.
I must honestly say, my daughter always told me that she needed the computer for homework. And then I was the one that forgot about it, meaning she was working, and then 2 hours later I went, I think I left that computer on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hard as a parent. I'm as guilty as anyone. I've had those same experiences with my kids where I've thought, oh gosh, I just realized that the 30-minute stretch of time turned into an hour stretch or a 2-hour stretch. So, you know, this isn't about perfection. It's about families identifying problems and saying, what can we do about this? And then what are we going to do to work towards something better?
Definitely. Well, right now we're going to take a break, but for all of you out there that are following us on your computer, stay with us.
Don't look at the screen.
Yes, yeah, don't look at the screen. This is a good time to gaze off out the window and see what a beautiful day it is. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and the subject we're talking about is screen time. And many of you are looking right at a screen right now while you're listening to us. And know that we are not in any way saying that that's bad. You know, that we realize technology has brought us an immense amount of positive things. But we also want to touch on the fact that there are also some things that can be negative. There is a downside. But there are ways to get around that. And that's why we have with us, we have Jeff Smith and we have Mont Criddle, and they are from Logan River. And their program deals with adolescents that may have started to see the downside of this. So let's talk a little bit more about some other ways in which we can help.
So for me, the question I would love to ask you is, again, parents. Parent role and the responsibility of all of this. Because, again, I know that parents, and I do keep that in mind with this question, are juggling often two jobs and a lot of things at the same time. And what responsibility do they have, and how should they apply that?
Well, I think the first thing that all parents have to do is this is not a do as I say, not as I do kind of issue. So all parents have to be willing to look at themselves first and say, am I asking my child to do something that I'm not doing myself? So it starts with a parent leading by example and maybe saying, you know what, I might need to cut back a little bit. If I'm checking Facebook 50 times a day and my kids are seeing that, how can I, you know, preach something to them that I'm not following myself? So that's where I would say parents should start, is you know, deciding that for themselves. From there, they then need to decide, what are our values in our home? What are our plans? What's okay for us? Because every home, every family is different. There's not a cookie cutter, this is what everyone should do. But they should know what they want to do with it. If they need to cut back, let's start to figure that out. Let's start to put some parameters and rules around it.
You think it would help that companies like Apple, like Samsung, would actually put a little bit more, like, you know, we get those little booklets with it, with ABCs and the steps and whatever. But we don't get, see, and this is why we think it's not dangerous. There is nothing in there in these booklets. Do they have a responsibility too?
Well, I don't know if I want to get, you know, Apple or Microsoft coming after me.
But just giving us information.
Right. Well, funny, we're talking about the internet. The internet is chock full of information and helps for parents. So if a parent is struggling and thinks, where do I turn? Funny enough, you can turn to the internet.
Yeah.
And you can Google, how do I help my child, da 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 da. And there are tips and websites. You know, I mentioned, you know, Dr. Young's Net Addiction website. There are just all sorts of resources out there. So you don't have to, you know, even necessarily find someone locally. You can get online and, oh, wow, here are four tips that I'm going to try to implement with my kids right now.
But how do you know that your kid is in trouble?
Great question.
Yeah, I think, you know, hopefully parents know their kids and know, you know, how they're doing and how they are in school and how they are with friends and what their mood is like. Anytime, you know, you start to see changes, while they're distancing themselves from the family, they're starting to get angry when I tell them it's time to turn the computer off. They've stopped hanging out with Johnny next door because they'd rather be in their room playing Fortnite. Or those are the times when a parent should go, some red flags are starting to pop up here and I might need to do something about it.
No, and that's a great point. And they need to get at that point, you need to know your children well enough to catch it early. And again, an example of, I can many times have gone into a young person's bedroom to pick them up, to bring them to a program like yours. And we're going into a bedroom. I can think of one case in particular. A child was considerably overweight. There were empty pizza boxes and donut boxes and things scattered all over the room, a 72-inch big screen, and the kid's still in bed, and controllers laying around him. And the parents said that it had been months since he had gotten out of bed and gone to school. Okay, so this is a point in which, I not only felt that the child needed to go to a program to get help, the parents needed to go into counseling to get some help as well, because that went way too far.
And that's a great point. And I think if there are parents out there that feel so helpless, and this thing has gotten so beyond me, I some simple rules are not going to help, then absolutely they need to seek out professional help.
Call Alan.
Exactly.
Well, not necessarily call me, although we may be able to refer you to somebody who can help you.
And there are wonderful programs, therapists, really in all communities. You just need to do the work and seek people out and find where the help is.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've got a listener question that has come in. This one reads, it says, I have been a middle school teacher for 12 years. During this time, it has been alarming to watch children with phones go from a select few to more than half the school. I find our kids with these devices increasingly distracted and much harder to engage in class. I have spoken about my experience at staff meetings, but my comments have fallen on deaf ears. It feels quite hopeless, and I wondered how you feel we in the education system can improve the situation. This is from Joni in Burbank, California. And Joni, first of all, thank you for taking the time to send the question. We appreciate it, and we know as a teacher you couldn't be listening live, so I'm sure you'll be catching this on iTunes later.
I personally believe in teacher-directed classes. I mean, education is shifting. There's a lot more self-paced, computer-based education. But really, in the classroom, there isn't a need for a smartphone. The teacher is doing the teaching. The materials are typically there and available. If they do need technologies, it can be provided by the school. And I really am a proponent of not having individual cell phones in the classroom. I know some schools have implemented policies like that and found them to be very successful. I think they're probably a challenge initially, but once that becomes the norm, everybody adapts.
Yep.
But to allow kids to have a distraction, sometimes kids, it used to be they'd pass notes around the classroom, and now they're bullying each other possibly, or, making fun of the teacher, or who knows what.
Yeah.
But really, there's no point in having them in the classroom. Their parents don't need to get a hold of them if they know they're at school. I mean, so I think schools need to take a hard look at their policies and what their goals are with children that they're responsible for.
There's actually a study out of the UK. I don't have the information right in front of me, but they did a study where they, phones had become more prominent in their school. They did a study where they took them away, and what a shock. Kids' grades went up, their behavior went up, everything improved when they said, we're going to go through this time where we don't have phones available. So I think it's on us, in our own communities, in our own school districts, to start a push to say, are there things that we've been kind of neglecting and maybe ignoring and that have, slipped in that we as a society need to bring the pendulum back a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I like that.
So another listener question. This one says, I know this is a side topic, but in a recent video, I heard that a child's skull is much thinner than an adult's and more susceptible to EMF damage from all the electronics they are using. I was hoping you knew more about how EMFs from our devices are potentially damaging a child's mental and physical health. And this is from George in Utah.
Well, I don't specifically know about that particular issue, but I do know that clearly brain development, maturity, body development is critical for someone who is 4, 6, 8, 12. When we're 40 years old, 50 years old, we're fully developed. Our personality is fully developed. Our brain is fully developed. So I can't help but think that it is more than likely more damaging for younger kids to be exposed to this for a variety of reasons, perhaps for this one that this listener brought up, as well as just all the other things that we just mentioned.
And I think I can add a little bit to that as well, because I've been studying the brain myself, and it is an area that psychiatrists and neurologists agree. So, this is an area that these are two groups that don't usually agree.
Right.
But they agree that the screens are affecting the neural pathways in our brain,
right.
Not just the children, but all of us. I know that there is also, with the Bluetooth system, they have done tests now. And so for somebody that wears a Bluetooth earpiece for a long period of time, they tested it and they measured both sides of their brain or both sides of their skull, and the skull wall was thinner on the side that they had worn the Bluetooth on. So if this is something that is deteriorating the thickness of our of the wall of our skull, chances are it can affect our brain too.
Yeah, and you make a great point, which it is. Technology is redefining our neural pathways. You know, kids who are sitting and staring at screens, it is shaping their brain. It is dictating the way that they think and their cognitions and all these things. So, yeah, again, we don't want to be so gloom and doom and this is scary, because it's not. There's all this wonderful stuff around it. But we have to, I think, as a society, we are becoming more aware of saying there are pieces of this that we have to do a little more with.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to interject just with one more thing, maybe for the parents out there, is, you know, I've seen my friends do this with little kids. So you need to get off the iPad. Johnny, I'm just going to take Johnny as example. And Johnny says, great. And what do you think he does? He goes to television. Mm-hmm. And it's acceptable. The
and
parents
it's
don't
screen.
Say anything.
Right.
Because the TV, you know, when I was young, I was allowed to watch it 1 hour. That's it. Mm-hmm. So that was my screen time. And if I missed it due to homework, there was no extra. So I'm just saying that we sometimes forget the objects that we've had for a long time in our household also have screens.
Right.
Right.
So it's not just the handheld in our hands, right?
Yeah, they're all around us. And so it comes back to those two things of balance, mm-hmm. and of parents assertively getting more involved in the issue and pushing their kids into other things, making them go outside, making them move away from the TV. I'm as guilty as anyone, and I've had to do that with my own kids. This past summer, I make my kids come outside. Hey, I'm going out to trim the hedges. Come out with me. And I felt guilty. Or one of those moments, my son was helping me, and he said, wow, I haven't done this for a while. This is fun. This feels good. And I had this moment of, oh, I need to do this more. If he's saying picking up hedge trimmings is fun and good, I need to do more of that.
Can you bring him over to my house?
Yeah, I will. Yeah, totally.
But I agree so much with what Alan said. I think we live in a society where we're almost afraid of our children.
Right.
And our children have kind of taken over, and they're our equal. I mean, Alan, you alluded to this. You have way more experience than I do in this arena here. But I think that that's a real big issue, is that, you know, when the kid says no, you're just kind of like, now what?
Yeah. Well, and again, that's where, you know, put on your parent hat and make a decision that is best. And again, and I'm also guilty. I mean, I'm also a father. I've also, you know, had those times in which afterwards I thought, wow, I really let them get away with that one. Or, you know, but it's not about, I think you said, it's not about being perfect.
No.
Okay. None of us are going to be a perfect parent. But we are going to wear the parent hat and do the thing that we feel is best for our child, even when they look at us and say, I don't like you. Okay, you know what? That's okay, because, you know, any example, I mean, you know, with, you know, the child, you know, that wants to keep reaching for something that they shouldn't have, mm-hmm. or, you know, reach for a flame or something like that. Okay, we're going to stop them from doing that because we know it's going to harm them.
Yeah.
We want to do it before. So if we're going to catch them early on this and they are doing it to an excess where we think it's negative, okay, it may not be harm to the point that they recognize it, but it's we're
right.
The adult.
We
know what the next step is.
So, Can I ask a real quick question to Jeff? Just real quick. Now I forgot the question. Sorry about that. What age do you say a parent could say, okay, we're going to get a phone for our children, without the child feeling like he's the only one left out?
Unfortunately, it's probably getting younger and younger. But I know from personal experience with my granddaughter, you know, she's 10, and she's negotiating with her parents to get a phone because her peers have a phone. And they haven't succumbed yet. But, you know, I think for each family, it's going to be different. I mean, they're a tool. I mean, if you're trying to keep track of your child, I mean, the Find My Phone mm-hmm. applications and tracking, and there's an ability for parents to monitor their children with the phones too. I mean, in addition to the trouble that a kid can get in with the phone. So I don't know. I think it's getting younger and younger. In turn, we talked earlier about toddlers with iPads and things. Mm-hmm. But when you get to the point where it's a communication device or primarily a communication device, and I would hate to see it too early. I would hope to be, in their teens when they're mature enough to be able to.
Shall we say middle school?
I'll tell you what Bill Gates' answer is.
Okay.
14. Bill Gates didn't let his kids have a phone until they were 14. So, again, yeah. I don't know if there's.
But then how do you make, I presume Bill Gates' kids are popular. Alan and my kids are maybe not very popular.
But they probably go to a school that won't allow them to have phones in the classroom.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was going to say maybe they're private
because
school.
Because it's almost seen as a disability. You know, the child is bullied for not having the right clothes. It's bullied for not having the right phone. And that part, that aspect is true.
It is. It is true. And that's why I think Jeff made a great point there. It's not an easy answer for all families, and there is not a here is the answer for all of us. So each family has to look at their own circumstances, situation, child, weigh the pros and cons, and then make a decision that hopefully errs on the side of not giving them a phone at 8, 9, 10 and pushing it more into their
teenage. One of the things is I think when kids start to have more autonomy and be more mobile, a phone becomes valuable. There aren't pay phones out there anymore. When I was a child, my parents let me run free. In fact, sometimes I wonder how I survived my childhood. Nowadays, parents are not inclined to do that because the perceived risks are so high, which is not really reality. But as kids are, out doing things independently, having a communication device certainly is a tool. And maybe the flip phone, the non-smartphone is, the answer earlier on. But having the world at your fingertips.
Do they still exist?
Yeah, they do. They're
I'm
hard to
kidding.
Find.
I'm kidding.
But having the world at your fingertips, it takes a certain level of maturity to be able to deal with that.
Agreed. Right. Totally.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for coming. Our engineer just reminded me we are out of time. But again, thank you so much for coming here. If there's a parent out there that's listening and saying, I think I need this help, what is the best way for them to get in touch with you?
We're of course on the internet at loganriver.com. There are other programs. If you just use technology and search, you'll find the people that are out there making a difference and that have resources. As Mont mentioned earlier, there are tons of resources out there because it's becoming more. There's more awareness than there was a year or two ago, or even 5 or 6 mm-hmm. years ago. But it's still not as prevalent as it should be. I mean, people, I don't know, necessarily perceive the risk. Those who are in the thick of it and are dealing with a family or a child in crisis are certainly aware of it. But, I think for a lot of people, it's not an issue, or it's not as big an issue as it might be in the future. So if you get over that tipping point, look for some help.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you.
Please be sure to put us on your calendar for next Monday when our special guest will be Maureen Healy to discuss her new book, The Emotionally Healthy Child.
And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people and be greatly appreciated. The next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page. Check it out. If you like it, like us, and continue to spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.